Assalamu alaikum. This is Haq Islam, host of the Oasis podcast. This week's guest needs no introduction. His life and his work speaks for itself. I am honored to have with us today our brother and my friend, New York City Council member from the 9th District, Harlem, New York, and member of the Exonerated Five, Dr. Yusuf Salam. Now, brother, for all of our guests, the first question is, what was your path to Islam?
You know, I think that that is such an appropriate question because it really speaks to the very nature of our people. You know, a lot of us think that Islam is that religion or that faith over there, when in fact, it's the very fabric of our being. You know, when I think about my, so to speak, origin story, I have to be reminded that although I was born a Muslim, I really didn't do a deep dive into understanding what Islam was until I was arrested and convicted and sent to the prison. And while I was in that prison, I started really reading the Quran, really understanding and questioning, what is this? You know, because a lot of times to be born a Muslim without understanding the gift that you have, you kind of just take it for granted. But to be able to almost go into a university of self, to understand why all of the things that people talk about, the things like in our community where, you know, our grandmothers tell us God doesn't put more on you than you could bear. Now, that's an interfaith message, but it's right in the Quran. It's almost as if our families, our friends, our loved ones, they know this, but they don't realize that what they know is the very nature of the universe.
Brother, when you say, I know we're all born Muslims, those of us who know it, those of us don't, but when you say you were born Muslim, are you talking about your family?
Absolutely. Please, my mother and my father, at least from the story that I know, my father accepted Islam, and then my mother accepted Islam after he accepted Islam. And they were married, and the cool thing about it was that we were born just like the tradition says. We didn't have a name on our birth certificate. Like my mother still has the birth certificate that says boy Salam, girl Salam for my sister, and boy Salam for my brother. And so we know that in Islam we have a baby naming ceremony similar to what we find in Africa, but really it's the foundation of not just naming the child haphazardly, being thoughtful, being careful, being inquisitive, right? Thinking and reflecting about this soul that was birthed into the world. And when I was born, my mother told me that they were trying to figure out what to name me, you know? And in that 7-day period that we know about, when it finally hit them, they named me after two of the greatest prophets that are mentioned and that are known. One is Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam, the other one is Prophet Idris alayhi salam. And I didn't know what the names meant, but I was born into the faith. I'm sure my father probably said the Adhan in my ear after I came out of my mother's womb, you know. And the thing about it too is that I don't know the story in full from my father's side, because my father and my mother, I guess you would say, they called it quits. And I was around 4 years old. And the only thing that I had left in the house from him was his Quran.
What was the moment that the light went off in your mind saying you had to study?
It was when they convicted me. I was the person who believed anything.
What do you mean believed anything?
I was gullible in a sense. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I didn't believe that I was going to get convicted. Even though in our communities, there's a seed of devaluation that has been placed in our societies that tells the young male and the young woman who looks like you and I that you're going to be dead or in jail before you reach the age of 21. Here I am, 15 years old, saying, not me. not realizing that this is part of the plan. We are right now inside of someone's 100-year plan. And to understand that is to really understand everything about everything that's going on outside of faith. And so when I was confronted with the truth and the reality that I'm convicted for a crime I didn't commit, what do I do now? Knowing that and hearing those echoes from my grandmother, my elders, my mother, God doesn't place more in you than you can bear. Hold on to the rope that God has extended to you. And I dove right into the Quran, and I started to read it almost as if I was in a university. And it's interesting because every Muslim that I know that really attaches themselves to having dialogues as it relates to Islam, if you've been in prison, you don't just say, in the Quran, Allah Ta'ala says X, Y, and Z. You are so studious that you will say, in Yusuf Ali, on page so-and-so, in Surah such-and-such, in the middle of the page, it says, and you will quote it as if you are Hafiz in English. It's a beautiful thing. And so I was meeting that type of mind in prison. And I was attracted to that type of mind because, you know, prior to going to prison, people would always say, you know, Yusuf, wow, you're like a philosopher. You know, I didn't know what that really meant in full, the denotative meaning. But I did know that they were saying things like, man, you know, you think about things in an in-depth way, you know. And for me, being able to say, oh, snap, I was supposed to grow through what I was to go through in order to become who Allah designed me to be.
So in many respects, prison, you looked at prison as a university.
Oh, yes.
You know, and there were many preeminent scholars who were at the university.
Yes, indeed.
You know.
Yes, indeed.
Talk about that, brother. Talk about some of the personalities you met.
You know, I met folks who, and this is interesting because I talk about this in my book, Better Not Bitter. I talk about how when I got to the adult facility, this is like 5 years after being in prison, being in the youth facility, I get to the adult facility, and because it's so brand new, I'm walking on eggshells the first few days and weeks. And I'm walking around trying to understand the lay of the land. I had gotten sent all the way up to Clinton, Dannemora. And
that's
so I'm
far.
Walking, it's super far, man. It's like, I think 5 to 15 miles from Canada, something like that. And I'm walking around, and because I had developed this sense of awareness, I saw two guys coming up on me. And I didn't know them, but immediately my senses went up. And they flanked me. It was so fast the way they did it. They flanked me, one side on either side of me. And they said, "You Yusuf Salam?" And I said, "Yeah." You know, trying to be strong and I'm trying to put a little bit of more bass in my voice. You know?
At 20.
And I said, "Yeah." They said, "Come with us." I said, "All right." I said, man, in my mind, I'm thinking, they're going to kill me. Man, I'm looking around trying to figure out how I'm going to get out of this, you know? And they brought me to the corner. And you have to understand, if you haven't been in a place like Clinton, Clinton's field, to me, almost felt like I was on a football field. That's how vast this field is. Filled with people. But I'm going to a corner that I couldn't see the tower. I couldn't see the cameras. I'm like, I'm out of the sight of the so-called security.
Right.
But I'm not out of the sight of Allah, right? And so I go into the corner and I'm observing the folks that are there, and there's a man beating a bag. The only way I can describe it is that he was beating this bag so bad, I felt bad for the bag. I mean, you know, because I learned martial arts prior to going to prison, and the way he was hitting the bag, like he would punch and twist, which is how you're supposed to punch, right? And every time he hit the bat, he ripped it. And I was like, oh, man. Like, in my mind, I'm thinking, they're going to do that to me. And when we got upon him, they said to him, we found him. And he turned around and he took off his glove. And he said to me, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And I probably let out a sigh, like, wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Like, I'm thinking, like, my goodness, I didn't know what was going to happen, you know?
Right.
And we shook hands. And then this man, he said to me, we are members of the Black Panther Party. We are members of the Black Liberation Army. And we are Muslims. You are a political prisoner. And you are safe. If anyone tries to do something to you, we will shut this place down. And I was like, you know, because part of the backstory to that is that I didn't know that, I didn't want to go to Clinton. I didn't want to go that far from my family. I didn't want to go anywhere other than home. And the closest place to home was a place right down the block called Lincoln Correctional Facility that's no longer a prison. Mm-hmm. But I said, man, they could send me there, you know? Right. And them sending me where they sent me, and I was so nervous, and I kept telling my mom, like, can you do anything? And my mother was like, everything's going to be all right, son. She was like the oracle, you know? And I'm sorry, I don't know if that, I just realized that noise in the background, is that? Okay, well, for us.
We're going to keep going, brother.
We're
going to tell everybody in the audience that's New York City.
That's New York City.
There's nothing we can do about New York City. It's the sounds of New York.
That's right. You know, and she was so cool. And it wasn't until a little later I found out that my mother knew that there were people in the mountains, in the prisons that they had put there unjustly, that knew that I was coming. And because of that, she was made to be assured that I was going to be safe. And she was, I couldn't believe it. I kept looking at my mom, I said, why is she so calm? And then I get there and it's like, you know, I describe me coming to this space of understanding the totality of what I had gone through by coming to the conclusion that the case called the Central Park Jogger case is actually a love story between Allah and his people. It's a story.
You have to elaborate on that one, brother, because I experienced, listen, I'm a New Yorker.
Yes, sir.
I went away to Howard University for school, but we experienced your life.
Yes, sir.
Because you're our brother.
Yes, sir.
Now I'm getting emotional. But also, you are me and I am you.
Mm.
So at any time, that could have been me.
Yeah.
You know, I have many experiences I could talk. Nothing as nothing.
Mm.
You know, I'm not even going to say it was anything. But, you know, we've had our run-ins with the police and being accused of things that we didn't do as a black man.
That's right.
So you were like a symbol of hope because you made it through. So we watched you,
man.
You know, and I'm just honored you're here and I'm proud of you.
Well, listen, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here too, you know. I walk around my community now and folks say to me, man, it's good to see you. And I say, it's good to be seen. And it's good to see you too. Because there was a time where people didn't want to see me. Especially when you look at the system that set me up and my brothers to be poster children of deviance. But see, in Islam, which is such a, I mean, you can't help but to be so thankful for the good and the bad, because Islam teaches you as it grows you. And it's teaching you something. It's teaching you that you can be strong. It's teaching you that Hasbunallahu wa ni'mal wakil. Allah will send the help. Allah will give you the ability to lift. Unseen forces will assist you. You won't know that they're there, but you'll feel this light ability to just lift things. I realized in that statement that this is a love story. I said, because what happened to me was just like you said, I now became a representative. I needed to come out on the other side to look back and to understand the majesty of God. I needed to know that. And so when I was going through it, I'm going through it until I started growing, until I started saying in a connotative definition of what I call Muslim, we learn that we are supposed to let go and let God, right? Jeez, a Muslim is one who has said, you know what? I'm giving my will. My will is now, whatever Allah wills, that's what I want for me. Mm-hmm. And so you're not fighting things as they go. You're just trying to ask Allah to give you the strength to keep on going. And so looking at the case itself, I said, man, this is such a beautiful story. I forget which hip hop artist said it. I think it might have been Talib Kweli, where he said, the beautiful struggle. Right? I'm a graphic designer. And so like this ring that I wear is a ring that I designed and I sent it to the same people that make the jewelry for Wu-Tang Clan. And they made this right here. Same exact way I designed it. They didn't change anything. And I wanted to make sure, even though we're called the Exonerated Five now, I said, I don't want to create a new logo. I want to make the story beautiful and make it a beautiful struggle. And so this love story that I've come to understand is a story, and this is things that we know. This is how beautiful this is. It's a story of a people. It's a story of us, but it's a story of a people who are buried alive and forgotten. The system will forget that we are seeds. And instead of a social death, when they build that fire to consume us, they'll forget the owner of the heat, Allah. And so we know in the Quran, it says man plans, but yet Allah plans, and surely Allah is the best of planners. And for me to come to that understanding and for people to see that in this story, not just a regular story, it's a story where I'm named after one of the very prophets that went through the same thing that I went through.
Now, that's one of my questions, but I want to go back to the University of Islam, also known as the prison, right? This is where you had time to study. You had great, talk about the teachers that worked with you in the prison to improve your deen.
Oh my goodness. You know, they worked with me so much and really in a way beautified my thinking about everything that I became the leader of the Muslims in the prison, in the youth facility for the 5 years that I was there. They wanted me to be their imam. And think about this. This is why I say the story is something.
Unbelievable.
I was given the worst indelible scar that you could imagine. And Allah put me in a position of authority that guaranteed my safety. I went to the adult facility and I'm there with murderers, rapers. I'm there with all kind of crazy stuff going on. And they made me the third person in position of the community. They made me the Qadi. They wanted me to judge the affairs of the community. By the time I was about to leave the facility, 6 months left to my regular bid, they made me the Naib, the second person in charge. Every place that I was in, Allah had placed a hedge of protection around me. And so I'm studying Islam, And I'm realizing that I had become accustomed to the noise that we just heard. I had become accustomed to the rigors of being distracted. But this silence was deafening. You hear the crickets at night. And then you begin to appreciate the silence because you don't hear the day going on in your mind. You hear nature. And that nature calms you down. And here I now, I'm reading, man, people say, well, who is Allah? Oh, that's the God of the Muslims. No, Allah is the name that you find associated with the creator of all. And if you were in the Middle East and you were Christian and you spoke Arabic, you would say Allah.
Allah.
If you were Jewish and you spoke Arabic, you would say Allah. It is the creator, right? And it's such a beautiful thing to realize that in the Quran you read, like I would sometimes open the book and kind of flip through. This is me going back and forth to court, and I would flip through and I would kind of read. And then I would say, oh man, I don't understand none of this. I would close it up and I would start drawing and doodling. When I got convicted of that crime that I didn't commit, I read from the beginning. And I realized that I was being told who Allah is.
Throughout the whole process.
But in the very beginning, yeah. I mean, you read it and it says, all praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Whoa. The most gracious, the most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Okay. You alone we worship. Your aid alone we seek. Show us the straight path. This is like, and it's so interesting because the Sirat al-Mustaqim is not just 1,400 or 1,445 years ago. The Sirat al-Mustaqim is found in the very next verse as well. The way of those that you have blessed, not the way of those who you are angry with, nor of those who have gone astray. And you like, wow. And then you come to the very next chapter and it opens up Alif Lam Mim. Dhalikal Kitabula, this is the book, sure without doubt, a guidance for those who believe in the unseen.
Brother, now I got that. You're dropping it. The cameras are heating up. My goodness.
Man.
Listen, brother, now, who is, throughout all of this that you've been through, outside of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, who's your favorite prophet?
I would say Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam. I would say him because when I, the best lesson I have ever received was when I read his surah, the surah written for him in the Quran, the surah of him, even him in his infancy. Daddy, I had a dream and I saw X, Y, and Z, right? First of all, the surah opens up and says, this is the most beautiful of stories. This is the only chapter that tells you a complete story of a messenger and a prophet. But it says, this is the most beautiful of stories, one through which you can gain wisdom. And you start reading, here's a young Yusuf, peace be upon him, that says, he comes to his father and says, I had this dream. The sun, the moon, and the stars were bound to me. And his father, a prophet himself, realized that Allah was placing this specialness of messengership in him. And so he said, don't tell your story, don't tell your dream to your brothers. Think about this for a second. Here we are in society. And a lot of times we have big dreams to us. And the best minds in society say, don't tell your dreams to small-minded people. Why? Because even if you tell it sometimes to your family, they'll be like, man, you can't do that. I know you. You, pop, 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 and they just chop you down. The thing that's worse is that we keep that messaging going on in our heads long after they've said what they've said. And so we go home and say, man, they told me I was such and such. Your you're casting that spell, that seed of devaluation in you. You got to tell yourself, and the only way you can kill it is by telling yourself 21 times the exact opposite. And that's one of the things, even in society, our people are aspiring to be either hip-hop artists or basketball players and football players. They don't know that there's somebody in the hip-hop business that might be making way more money than the actual artist. There's somebody who has to make sure the schedule is correct. Like my wife always says, man, if I could just control the lights to the Beyonce concert. Man, you drop the lights in a hip-hop concert or a R&B concert and you bring them back up, that sets the scene.
But this is why, brother, I tell you, but this is why the Oasis is here.
Yeah.
Because Muslims, there's 2 billion of us.
Yes, sir.
On the planet Earth. Median age 23. Mm. Average three children per family. Now, yes, I know, sir, you got 10 kids, but we'll get to that. Yes, and it's, sir, projected that we will be 3 billion by the year 2060. Mm-hmm. Okay, with that in mind, we're in every aspect of life in terms of careers.
That's right.
And we want to showcase careers to our youth, that there is an opportunity to be somebody or something outside of a football, basketball player. You really need to control Beyonce's lights.
That's right.
You need to be Beyonce's stylist, her wardrobe artist, or even the guy driving the truck from here to, you know, all the cities he's gone to. We have to expand our minds. And that brings us to you being city councilman. What drove you to be? Well, first, you didn't finish about Joseph.
Oh, man.
Because you got to tell, just give a couple of minutes, because that's, man, the story of Joseph is an incredible, Prophet Yusuf, I'm,
yes,
sorry.
Yes,
but
yes,
for many of us, many people out there, you know, it's Joseph. You know, they know him as Joseph.
Yes, indeed.
You know, just,
yes,
like the Jesus name really wasn't Jesus. We won't talk about that today. but to, right, give a little bit of Joseph history.
You know, so I love to say Prophet it this Yusuf. Way, because Prophet Yusuf is found in the Bible. Prophet Joseph is found in the Quran. Same person.
Same
story.
Same story.
Peace be upon him. And the beautiful thing about the story is that it's like people would say, oh, that sounds like my story that I read in the Bible. It's coming for the Lahu Maghfuz. Allah is the one who reveals the revelation and has revealed revelation since the beginning of time. And so when we think about even Prophet Adam alayhi salam, Allah says in the Quran, we sent the message to him. Mm. What was the message? It was, remember, don't get distracted, don't worship anything other than me. Because in today's world, we'll have our back against the wall. Literally. Yusuf alayhi salam was in the household of the people who adopted him, for lack of a better word, after his brothers really got rid of him, you know. And they threw him in a well, and the people, when they got him out of the well, they sold him for trinkets. And it's so interesting, because I like that value. And I'm trying to think about the antithesis of what it is that I really want to say about the value. But they didn't know who they had. And so they sold him for a few coins. He may not have even knew
Who he was. He didn't know.
And so he's growing up. He may have forgotten the dream while he was growing until certain things began to happen in his life. And so here he is now in the house of the folk who adopted him, who happened to be in the rulership. And Allah is blessing him two ways. He's giving him safety, and he's also blessing him, because it says, there's a description of Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam, that when you read about his characteristics, his appearance, it says that Allah gave him, in his appearance, half of the beauty that he placed in the world. Half of all of the beauty he placed in the world, Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam had that. And so now here he's growing up. He's, you know, I could imagine he's, you know, he's a baby at once. And now he's looking strong. And, you know, he comes into the room and the ruler's wife has been watching him. My God, she's not saying this out loud, but this time she might have, right? But he checking out and he's like, uh-oh. He backed into a corner. And she says, look, man, you're going to give me some of that. And he tries to run away and get out of there. As soon as he does it, Surah Yusuf, it says, she grabbed his shirt and it ripped and her husband walked in. And she, she said, what is the, he was, you know, she's protecting herself because she's out of order. From what I understand, it was a child or a baby said, well, you know, you just came in and I know it looks a little strange to you what you're seeing, but if his shirt is ripped from the front, you know, he lying. But if his shirt is ripped from the back,
he telling the truth.
His shirt was ripped from the back. But the father said, this is deep. The husband said what? The husband said to Yusuf alayhi salam, oh man, listen, you know women. Just try to, you know, don't. Can you, basically, it's like he said, can you keep this between us? But the word got out, and later on in the surah, it says that the people heard that the ruler's wife wanted the servant. And she said, I got something for them. She called a big banquet, and everybody there, they're ready to eat oranges and figs and all kind of good stuff. And she called, said, well, Yusuf, can you come and bring some water to our group? He walks out and every single one of those women cut their hand watching him. Oh my goodness, who is this? And she said, yeah, that's the one y'all telling me I want. And it's interesting because when I was reading the translation, one of the translations I read, it appeared to say they all then said, you gonna sleep with us. And that's when he said, oh my goodness, the prison. They said, if you don't, we're going to send you to jail. He said, the prison is better for me than what you were calling me to.
And this is why that verse spoke to you.
It spoke life into me.
That surah. It wasn't verses, the surah. Now, brother, let's move on to job opportunities.
Yes, sir.
You know, because I want to introduce our audience to other job opportunities outside of football, basketball, and hip-hop. You are assemblyman. You represent New York's 9th District. Harlem. New York City Council, 9th District, Harlem.
Yes, sir.
What made you come into that realization that you wanted to serve the community in that capacity?
Well, I mean, the first realization really came from reading that surah in the Quran, realizing that Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam, when he came out of prison, Allah had gifted him with the ability to have insight into all kinds of things. And when he came out of the prison, he was immediately placed in a position of authority. And the story basically says, in many ways, he rose up the ladder of political success. And I didn't know what that meant. And I know that there's probably all kinds of, you know, recorded history about him, even if it's not in Islam, because he was in Egypt. And I remember a friend of mine said he was over in Egypt and a guy passed him a scroll and it was written hieroglyphics. And he said, can you help me translate this one? He's looking at it. And he says, what is this? He says, oh, this is part of the governance and societal things that was going on in the time of Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam. They had the scrolls.
Wow.
And so to fast forward to really what led me to be where I am now. When we were found innocent, 13 years had went by. I had already done all of the time that they had given me. both prison time and time on parole. Unjust. Unjust time. But I had done it all. 13 years later, from 1989-2002, Corey Wise is still in prison. Corey Wise is the miracle. And I don't even know if he knows it. From a real, like a Yakin perspective, right? Corey Wise came with me to have my back and ended up, because he was 1 year older by a few months, he was 16, they sent him to adult prison, but they gave him an adult sentence. And because of that, he spends the most time in prison. But because he held on to the rope of Allah, the truth came and confronted him. The guy who did it saw him and said, oh my goodness, I got to tell the truth. He tells the truth. Corey Wise ends up because he held on. I mean, Corey's position in our story is one of the most significant pieces, because he could have said somewhere along his time, you know what? I can't take this. I'm about to kill myself. A lot of people kill themselves in prison. You know what? I can't take this. Let me just lie and tell them that I did it so that they could let me go. If you've seen When They See Us, they came to see him and take him to his hearing. And he said, no, I'm not going. If they don't want to hear my truth, I don't want to waste my time. Corey was holding on. And it's such a beautiful thing. Because he was holding on, and because Allah's plan is the best of plans, Allah used Corey to be the miracle that freed us all. So now here we are out in the streets thinking, after we got exonerated, that there was going to be a speedy method to make us whole. We started marching for justice. We started crying for justice. We had been run over by the spike wheels of justice and had been in tremendous pain. And many of our community members had experienced, either vicariously through our story or a personal story of their own, the same trauma. I kept walking and I said to myself, here we are. Like, really, I said, does this work? Does marching work? The shouting work. If they're going to do what they're going to do anyway, how are we going to get what we need? Who's in the halls of power hearing our voice, hearing our shouts? And then I realized that every time I came home, I was looking in the mirror, and it was almost a representation that it had to be me. And so when I started really contemplating running for office, I was telling friends of mine, and they were like, oh man, you would be great in politics. You are exactly what we need. And then I remember telling my cousin Frank Harris, you know, he is one of the executives in Sony, and his client, which is probably one of his business partners now too, because they probably have other ventures, is Jason Derulo, you know? And so, you know, we were talking. And he said, you know, Yusuf, you can go into politics anywhere, but anywhere other than New York is off Broadway. And I said, oh my God, I got to come back to the scene of the crime. I was living in the greater Atlanta area by that time. And, you know, Keith Wright, the great Keith Wright, the son of the great Judge Bruce Wright.
Bruce Wright.
Cut him loose, Bruce.
Every black man know. Judge Bruce Wright.
That's right.
You know, and we would just call him Judge Bruce Wright, see him in Harlem, you know.
Yes, sir.
Judge. And then we didn't call him Cut Him Loose Bruce.
Right. That was actually the name they gave him.
They gave him.
Because they hated him.
They hated him because they knew what we were dealing with as a people, yeah. as black young men.
Yes, sir.
You know.
But just to quickly sum up that piece about the politics, Keith Wright comes down to the greater Atlanta area.
He went to Atlanta to get you.
He went to meet me and sit with me and talk to me. And he said to me.
Well, but before you, Tell everybody who Keith Wright. Keith Wright is an important person.
Yes, indeed.
In New York City politics.
Yes, indeed.
So please.
Right now, he is the district leader for Harlem. But he was for years, for probably over a decade, he was the assemblyman for Harlem. And the fact that he had, I mean, he still has such a great track record because politically, he's a mover and shaker.
That's where I want to.
You know what I'm saying?
Because Keith Wright is a mover
and shaker. They call him the kingmaker, basically.
There you go. And then that's
what they call
it. I was trying to pull it out, and we got it out.
Yes, sir.
Because the kingmaker went to Atlanta.
My goodness.
To find you.
And what I remember that stuck with me is he said to me, "You know, Yusuf, you are our modern day Nelson Mandela." And I had to taste that. I had to really sit with that because Nelson Mandela is a hero of mine. He's a man who did 27 years and became the president. But the 27 years, he didn't come out bitter. He said to be angry and bitter is like drinking poison and expecting your enemy to die. And I remember when I started really understanding his words, I came across a word from Dr. Maya Angelou, and it felt like they might have been in conversation with each other. And she says, "You should be angry. You must not be bitter. Bitterness is like a cancer. It eats upon the host. It doesn't do anything to the object of its displeasure." And then she teaches us what I call alchemy. She says, use that anger. You dance it. You march it. You vote it. You do everything about it. And then she said, you talk it. Never stop talking it. For me, looking at the natural progression of what's next is not politics as usual, because I'm not a politician. I didn't study political science. I went to the belly of the beast, and for me, it became the womb of America. And by the time I was rebirthed back into society, I could see in the dark. I could see all kinds of things that were plaguing our community. And like they always say, if you really want to answer those individuals who've been close to the pain, who've been in pain, who've not lost their minds, who can articulate the situation, those are the ones that you need to have at the table.
That's right. Now, being that this is part one of many.
Yes, sir.
Give a message to our youth. Final message to the youth, not only of Harlem, but the Muslim youth of the world.
My goodness. You know, I want our youth in particular, both men and women, to know that you're not crazy. And I'm saying that because society will make you feel like you're out of your mind. I want you to know that you was born on purpose and with a purpose, because Allah makes no mistakes. And the proof of that is this, that when our mother and father, all of our mother and father, were in the process of creating us, life was racing towards life. And on the one end, you have one, and on the other hand, you have 400 to 500 million possibilities racing to fertilize that egg. You made it. That means that you were supposed to be here.
Supposed to be.
Society will make you think that you was born a mistake. And if you internalize that and say, I was born a mistake, you begin to move throughout your life like you are a mistake. You begin to believe that you're going to be dead or in jail before you reach the age of 21. But we need you. We need the human potential of your purpose to be realized so that we can create a better society. But believe you me, we are at war. And that war is not so much physical, but it's very much mental. Because if I can... It's spiritual, right? And that's where the fight is. The fight is not, I mean, the true fight is against spiritual wickedness in high and low places. That is the fight.
That's scripture. You took it right out of, oh. But in any event, brother, you know, I hear my producer in my ear. We're going to have to come back.
Yes, sir.
Brother, we're so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. Thank you. We're honored to have you at the Oasis.
My pleasure, brother.
And we have to talk about, because I could hear you thinking, there's things going on in the future that we have to talk about.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm going to stand right right by you. Thank you for coming to the Oasis, Dr. Yusuf Salam.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me, brother.